Good morning, and welcome to the West Valley News Digest. I'm Karen Kelly, your volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today is Saturday, March 21st, 2026. I'll be starting out with news from the West Valley View, which covers Buckeye, Avondale, Goodyear, and Tolleson. I'll then be reading from the Wickenburg Sun, and at the bottom of the hour, we'll be covering news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise. So let's get started with news from westvalleyview.com. First up is Goodyear launches campaign to combat nationwide scams, article by Jimmy Van Wickler. The City of Goodyear and the Goodyear Police Department are helping residents combat nationwide scam threats through a community awareness campaign centered on the message, "Stop, slow down, don't become the victim." After noticing an uptick in fraud cases, the Goodyear Police Department launched the campaign to raise awareness about the warning signs of scams and reduce victimization. "We've all noticed it, right?" said Sergeant Mayra Reeson, public information officer for the Goodyear Police Department. "Constant barrage of text messages with links and emails, all these filters, and they're always evolving and changing." The department said that with billions of dollars lost each year to fraud, scams are a growing problem, not just in Goodyear, but nationwide. Criminals constantly change tactics, making it difficult to warn the public about specific schemes. "Our investigators have come to me a couple of times now about putting out awareness campaigns on specific threats, but they're just so ever-changing," Sergeant Reeson said. "We just want to make the community aware." Furthermore, the department added that criminals use a variety of methods to target victims, including phone calls, text messages, and emails. As artificial intelligence tools become more widely available, scammers in other countries are using them to translate messages into English. "Nowadays, with ChatGPT or Grok or whatever you're using, they're very proper," Sergeant Reeson said. "You can type what you want to say in whatever language, have it translated to an email in English, and it's grammatically correct." Reeson said there are a variety of ways that scammers utilize phone calls, texts, and emails are often used to create a false sense of urgency. They may claim a victim faces arrest or that their account will be shut down, using fear to pressure people into sending money. "It's just a tactic to get you to act," Sergeant Reeson said. "It's the urgency that they're pushing, so you act before you really think about it and realize something doesn't seem right." The awareness campaign also aims to reduce victimization among seniors by increasing knowledge about common scam tactics. Because of the pressure to act fast, victims often don't see the red flags until it's too late, Goodyear Police Chief Brian Issett said. "In fact, pressure to take action immediately is a red flag. Always remember, if something feels off, it probably is." Older adults are often targeted because they may have fewer resources available to help verify whether a message or request is legitimate. The Goodyear Police Department's Volunteers in Police Services program operates YANA, which stands for You Are Not Alone. The program provides regular telephone calls and home visits to seniors with limited family or community contacts. It can also serve as a resource to help verify whether a situation may be a scam. "I went to a YANA gathering that they had, and they actually brought in someone from a local bank who was talking about bank fraud they're seeing," Sergeant Reeson said. "They have these types of resources and groups where maybe there is someone you could call or get connected with before you make those purchases." Many people fall victim to scams each year, contributing to billions of dollars lost to fraud. Victims often feel embarrassed about what happened, which can discourage them from reporting the crime. Sometimes there's so many different scams, and sometimes victims don't want to come forward because they are embarrassed, Sergeant Reeson said. The Goodyear Police Department encourages residents to watch for common warning signs, including threats of arrest, requests for banking or financial information, demands for immediate payment, particularly through gift cards, cryptocurrency, gold, or wire transfers, and instructions to keep transactions secret. Police recommend residents stop communication immediately. Never send money or personal information. Contact the organization directly using a verified phone number and report suspicious activity to the Goodyear Police Department. The goal for us is to reduce the number of people who fall for fraud, Sergeant Reeson said. Just making people aware of what to look out for is the main goal, because not everything fits into the same box. And that concludes the article entitled Goodyear Launches Campaign to Combat National Scams. Our next article, Buckeye Calls for I-10 Project Funding. Article by Joshua Fenty, West Valley View, staff writer. The city of Buckeye has called for state leaders to keep the Interstate 10 widening project on schedule, following a proposed budget from Governor Katie Hobbs' office that defers the $27 million allocated for the first phase of construction to an unknown date. For Mayor Eric Orsborn, the bottom line is clear. The highway is not a safe place to drive in its current state. Not only is the I-10 not a safe place to drive, but the backups that happen there add a significant amount of time to the commute going out of or into the Metro Phoenix area. And that's money wasted, Orsborn said. It is the responsibility of the state and the federal government to build these highways. It's already fully designed. It's just a matter of selecting the contractor and getting started. Currently, the plan to widen the I-10, the mayor said, has been split into multiple phases across three fiscal years. $27 million in funding for this year, $30 million for the next year, and $76 million for the following year. The first phase is meant to address the section of the highway from Citrus Road to Verado Way. Governor Katie Hobbs' office and the Arizona Department of Transportation, ADOT, the mayor said, agreed to couple the funding for this fiscal year with the Jack Rabbit Trail Interchange, a project that is funded separately out of the Maricopa Association of Governments, MAG, Proposition 479. The design for the widened I-10, completed by ADOT and MAG, includes a high occupancy vehicle lane HOV, concrete median barrier, median lighting, and widened bottlenecks. The full expansion would yield three lanes in each direction, with HOV lanes on each side. Despite the completion of a request for proposal and a contractor signing up for the work, Orsborn said that the current draft of the governor's budget pulls the $27 million from this leg of the project and defers it to another year. We don't know when it will get done, but according to Hobbs's budget, it would not happen this year, he said. We are trying to get the word out to the public and make sure they understand that the state is not coming through with what they said they would do in funding the freeway expansion starting this year, and make sure everybody has an opportunity to let the state, the governor's office, and the legislature know that's not acceptable to us. Orsborn added that he feels dividing a one-year project into three is inefficient. The city of Buckeye contributed $3 million and MAG contributed $7 million locally in 2023 to support the widening project, which Orsborn said is at risk amid ongoing budget negotiations. According to Orsborn, plans to widen the I-10 began in late 2017, early 2018, which focused on securing funding at the time. In 2019, funding was secured for the construction of an additional HOV lane, which was completed in 2023. As it stands, more than 140,000 vehicles travel on the I-10 between State Route 85 and Citrus Road each day, according to Osborne, a 40% increase compared to 2 years ago. The mayor said that between 2021 and 2025, 1,145 crashes were reported between Citrus Road and Verado Way due to the stop-and-go traffic in the area. The accidents included rear-end collisions and commercial truck rollovers that resulted in 14 serious injuries and 2 fatalities. Just to put that into perspective, we're talking over 1,000 crashes in the 3 to 4 mile distance. It's a dangerous area, Osborne said. There's a lot happening in that short corridor, and keeping it that way means that we'll continue to have incidents there, especially with the growth happening in the West Valley. There is also the main commerce artery that goes back and forth to California. In addition to easing traffic and benefiting the economy, he said, the widening I-10 would also prove beneficial to first responders to respond more quickly to various emergency situations by arriving sooner. In light of the potential loss of funding, the mayor said that he has expressed displeasure to Hobbs's staff and assured them that the city would inform its residents. Osborne also mentioned that Buckeye isn't the only city fighting for the improvements, naming Goodyear's Mayor Joe Pizzillo and others in advocating for the project to move forward as scheduled. It's imperative that we get this funded and built as soon as possible so that we can continue on with growth, but also quality of life for people that are having to commute back and forth in this corridor, Osborne said. There's no shortage of infrastructure projects that we need out this way, but this is one of the most important that we need right now in the near term. Contact your legislators and the governor's office and tell them that you want I-10 improvements funded this year. More information about the project and email addresses for the Arizona Senate and House of Representatives are available at buckeyeaz.gov. And this concludes the article, Buckeye Calls for I-10 Project Funding. Our next article, Avondale Mayor Celebrates City's Progress, written by Joshua Fenty, West Valley View staff writer. The city of Avondale celebrated its 80th anniversary since its founding in 1946, inviting local and state leaders, residents and partner organizations to Estrella Mountain Community College for the State of the City. Delivering his second address since being elected as mayor, Mike Pineda highlighted the city's various accomplishments and plans for a bold future. I am proud to call Avondale home, and I'm even more proud to lead the city into the future, Pineda said. When I look ahead to the next 80 years, I see big things. Thoughtful growth, innovation, neighborhoods that stay connected, businesses that continue to flourish, and children growing up here just like I once did. I am proud to be a small part of that story, and I'm excited for all that we will accomplish together. Featuring the tagline, Honored Past, Bold Future, 80 Years of Progress, the Avondale State of the City unfolded at the Estrella Conference Center on March 12th from 6 to around 8 p.m. In addition to city leaders and employees across multiple departments, the event also drew former Mayor Ken Weiss, as well as various former council members, Consul General of Mexico in Phoenix, Jorge Mendoza, United States Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva, District Director Patrick Robles, and representatives from the offices of Senators Mark Kelly and Ruben Gallego were in attendance as well. President and CEO Jeffrey Campos of the West Valley Regional Chamber, Colonel Tyler Smith of the Luke Air Force Base, County Supervisor Debbie Lesko, and various other state leaders were also among the guests. In order to bolster public safety in Avondale, the city intends to erect two new fire training towers, complete with a vehicle burn prop, flashover prop, and confined space structures to allow the firefighters to train in Avondale. Encompass Health Rehabilitation Hospital broke ground in February 2024, joining various newer health facilities in Avondale, including Arizona Arthritis and Rheumatology, Phoenix Heart and Pinnacle Vein and Vascular Center. The new rehabilitation hospital, Pineda said, will create more than 170 healthcare jobs. In 2025, Avondale surpassed a major milestone, 100,000 residents, Pineda said. Growth brings opportunity, and our responsibility is to ensure the infrastructure, services, and public safety grow alongside it. Healthcare is not only about access to care, it is a major economic engine for Avondale. Two major commercial additions to the city will include a Fry's Marketplace in the southern part of Avondale and an Embassy Suite by Hilton. According to the mayor, the hotel will feature 180 guest rooms, a conference center, and rooftop views of the Astrea Mountains. The Embassy Suite is slated to join the sports, dining, lodging, and entertainment destination, The Boulevard. Looking forward to this year in the city of Avondale, Mayor Pineda said that along with public safety, one of his major priorities would be tending to the city's parks. Many of the projects that the city of Avondale began last year, completed recently, or have planned on the horizon, including improvements to and construction of various outdoor recreational spaces. The efforts will be supported by $68 million in general obligation bonds approved by voters, Pineda said. Scheduled to be completed in February 2027, Donatella Park will be a new neighborhood park located off of Avondale Boulevard in Encanto, the city's only park north of the I-10, Parks and Rec Director Corey Lavera mentioned. Slated to cover 5.37 acres of land, the project has a total budget of roughly $5.47 million and will feature open turf, basketball courts, a playground, a 1/4 mile loop path, and a fitness area. A renovation of Desi Lorenz Park is scheduled to be completed in October of 2026. Working with a budget of approximately $1.38 million, the project seeks to remove existing turf and shade and replace it with native landscaping, xeriscaping, new lighting, and educational areas. On January 6, the city unveiled both the renovated dog park at Friendship Park, as well as the newly constructed pickleball courts. According to the mayor, $1.5 million went into renovating the dog park, ensuring comfort and usability for residents and their pets. 8 new pickleball courts were also included in the space, featuring upgraded lighting, shaded seating, and practice walls, which the mayor said was a $2 million investment in health and wellness. Additionally, the city is constructing a bridge across the Arizona Department of Transportation drainage channel, connecting an existing multi-use path south of the I-10 to Friendship Park. As previously reported in the West Valley View, the Civic Center Park, located directly behind the Civic Center Library, was unveiled on November 12th. The new recreational space features a large grass field with future shade trees, a grass berm, an ADA-certified playground, spaces for art activations, and other events and various seating areas. It's been a blessing for all of the challenges that have been presented, the new development that has occurred within our city, and more importantly, it's been a blessing just to learn, the mayor said. We understand that there are a lot of needs and things that our residents deserve, whether it be good schools, jobs they can work here as opposed to going elsewhere in the valley, transportation, or economic development. We are here to bring those things to our residents and I'm doing everything I can with the assets and resources that I have possible to make those things come to fruition. And that's all the time we have for the article, Avondale Mayor Celebrates City's Progress. This concludes news from the westvalleyview.com. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. Now let's move on to news from the Wickenburg Sun. First up, town warns public about increasingly sophisticated payment scams. The town of Wickenburg is alerting residents, contractors, and businesses about an increasingly sophisticated scam targeting individuals who have submitted planning, zoning, or building permit applications. The Federal Bureau of Investigation recently issued a warning about cyber criminals impersonating local government agencies and sending fraudulent invoices requesting payment related to permit applications. These scams are becoming more advanced and convincing. The town of Wickenburg has begun receiving calls or emails from residents and contractors who report receiving spam invoices or payment requests from fraudulent sources. In many cases, the messages appear legitimate and may reference actual project information. Officials believe scammers may be obtaining information from publicly available sources or application records, allowing them to craft emails that closely resemble legitimate government communications. To help protect applicants, the town is taking additional steps to reduce the exposure of personal contact information contained in permit applications that become part of public record. Town staff are actively working to redact personal details, such as email addresses and phone numbers, from publicly posted documents online whenever possible to help minimize spam and fraudulent activity. The town of Wickenburg reminds the public of the following important safeguards. Carefully question any email requesting additional payment related to a permit or application. Be especially cautious of requests for wire transfers or urgent payment methods. Verify the sender's email address and do not rely solely on the appearance of an official invoice. The town of Wickenburg will never request payment by wire transfer. Residents and contractors are strongly encouraged to contact the town directly before making any payment if they receive an unexpected or suspicious request. When in doubt, call the town of Wickenburg prior to processing any payment. Anyone who believes they may have received a fraudulent permit-related invoice should contact the Town of Wickenburg Community Development Department to verify the request. Suspected scams can also be reported to the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, IC3, at https://www.ic3.gov/. The town of Wickenburg is committed to keeping residents and businesses informed about emerging issues that may impact the community and encourages vigilance against scams targeting the public. This concludes the article, Town Warns Public About Increasingly Sophisticated Payment Scams. Next up, obituaries. W. Guthrie Packard Jr. passed away March 15th. Jeanette Olive Bingham passed away March 3rd. Adrian Arona passed away February 18. Geraldine R. Ballinger passed away March 8. Jerry L. Riggins passed away March 9th. Next up, around town. St. Albans Rummage Sale returns March 21st. A supper rummage sale will be held at St. Albans Episcopal Church, 357 West Yavapai Street, on Saturday, March 21st, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The wide variety of gently used items include boutique clothing, shoes, purses, and other unique accessories. In addition to personal items, arts and crafts supplies, entertainment, and kitchen items will be on hand at the sale. Come early to get the best selection of these one-of-a-kind bargains. West Fest returns April 4th. Saddle up for an action-packed day as Wickenburg celebrates its rich Western heritage at the Wickenburg West Fest. This free community event will take place Saturday, April 4, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Stone Park, 164 East Apache Street. Attendees can enjoy a gun show reenactment by the renowned Wickenburg Marshals from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. in Stone Park. Guests are encouraged to bring a camping chair and arrive early to get the best seat in the house. Live entertainment will kick off at 11 a.m. with music by the Rhythm Rangers. At 1 p.m., a line dancing instructor will lead guests through classic Western dance moves. Experienced dancers are also encouraged to join in and show off their skills on the dance floor. Families can explore a variety of Old West games like Cartapult, Sarsaparilla, Swamp, Hook and Ring, try their hand at gold panning, and enjoy delicious offerings from local food trucks, along with many other exciting attractions throughout the event. Whether you're a rodeo enthusiast or just looking for a fun family outing, West Fest has something for everyone. For more information and event updates, visit wickenburgaz.gov/events. Now let's have This Week in Wickenburg History. 70 years ago, March 23, 1956, ground was broken and work started early last Monday morning on Wickenburg's new half-million-dollar community hospital on a tract of land of approximately 4 acres just north of town. Nearly 40 people turned out for the groundbreaking ceremony. Luke White, a director of the hospital board, served as master of ceremonies. 50 years ago, March 25, 1976, Tom Thomas of Wickenburg was surprised this past Thursday when he received an invitation to a banquet at the White House. The banquet, hosted by President Gerald Ford, is in honor of Tom's nephew, Ronald Bennett. Ron is a UPI press photographer assigned to the president. This year, he won first place in the nation for his outstanding photographic work there. Ron Bennett has had a number of outstanding assignments, such as press photographer for former President Nixon and was with the Robert Kennedys at the time of Bobby Kennedy's assassination. Ron's pictures of the assassination and of Sirhan Sirhan were the first to be released to the news media. Many Wickenburg people will remember Ron as he has vacationed here with the Thomas family on various occasions. And 10 years ago, March 16, 2016, Boyd Gift to Humane Society. The late Alex and Jane Boyd had a fondness for the Humane Society of Wickenburg that transcended their lives. In fact, this month, the shelter received a $1 million donation, the most recent endowment to the community from the Alex and Jane Boyd Irrevocable Trust. Jane was a founding member of the shelter and remained on the board until her death on April 30, 2015. Alex built the stairs and colorful boxes in the cat room. Ironically, as new HSW director Jessica Smith cleaned out a shed recently, she found a handmade step stool with a long piece of wood attached to steady the user. As she examined it, she turned it over to find Alex Boyd's name carved underneath. And that last tidbit leads us to the Pet of the Week through the Humane Society of Wickenburg, whose phone number is 928-684-8801. And who do we have this week but Bowser? Bowser is a cattle dog mix who is 5 years old and weighs 62 pounds. This white and brown neutered male is the kind of dog who gives his whole soul to his people. He's ready for a fresh start and a forever family who will never let him feel alone again. That concludes news from the Wickenburg Sun. I'm Karen Kelly, and you're listening to the West Valley News Digest on Sun Sounds of Arizona. You can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. For the remaining time, I will be reading news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise from yourvalley.net, as well as the online editions of the Glendale, Peoria, Surprise Independence, the Glendale Star, and the Peoria Times. So let's continue. Midwestern decides not to hike tuition at Glendale campus. Midwestern University will freeze tuition across all programs for the 2026-27 academic year at its campuses in Glendale and Illinois. The decision was approved by the Board of Trustees as part of the fiscal year 2027 budget, July 1, 2026 through June 30, 2027. It is a pivotal time for graduate and professional healthcare students nationwide. Beginning July 1, 2026, federal lending changes under the One Big Beautiful Bill, OB3, will introduce annual and lifetime borrowing caps for graduate and professional students, possibly creating funding gaps for those pursuing advanced healthcare degrees. By holding tuition steady, Midwestern University is taking steps to sustain the pipeline of future physicians, pharmacists, dentists, physical therapists, optometrists, and other healthcare professionals. At Midwestern University, we believe institutions must lead during times of economic uncertainty, Dr. Joshua Baker, president and CEO of Midwestern University, stated in a press release. Our priority remains clear: ensure that talented, caring students are able to pursue careers in healthcare and can graduate prepared to serve their communities. The new federal lifetime borrowing caps will limit how much graduate and professional healthcare students can access through federal loans. For many students, particularly those in multi-year doctoral programs, the changes will likely require new financial planning strategies. Midwestern University supports students through the Midwestern University MWU Loan, a student financing option designed to bridge gaps as federal lending rules change. With low fixed interest rates, no origination fees, and program-aligned borrowing limits, the MWU loan offers a solution. Complementing this support, the university's free Sensible Strategies Financial Wellness Program offers one-on-one guidance and practical tools. And this concludes the article, Midwestern Decides Not to Hike Tuition at Glendale Campus. Let's continue. Our next article is Rattlesnake Scorpion Activity on the Rise. With the warmer weather, venomous species like rattlesnakes, scorpions, spiders, centipedes, and lizards are more commonly seen as they search for food, shelter, and mates. The Banner Health Poison and Drug Information Center already has handled 10 reported cases of rattlesnake bites and 237 scorpion stings this year. In 2025, the center saw nearly 2,300 scorpion stings and more than 100 rattlesnake bites. The peak season for these occurs during the state's hottest months, typically July through September. Children are especially at risk for suffering from bites or stings, with more than a dozen pediatric rattlesnake bite cases and thousands of scorpion stings reported each year. When going for a hike or doing activities like gardening or yard work, make sure to wear shoes and protective clothing, and be extremely cautious when reaching or stepping into obscured areas. Rattlesnakes often hide under wood, piles, brush, and rocks. If found, contact a pest control company for relocation, and never attempt to move, kill, or relocate it yourself. If bitten by a rattlesnake, get to a hospital as soon as possible for treatment. Never cut the wound, attempt to suck out venom, or use ice or tourniquets. For more information, visit bannerhealth.com/poison center. And this concludes the article, Rattlesnake, Scorpion Activity on the Rise. Our next article is, Mr. Orange Pleads Guilty to 3 Charges of Attempting to Sexually Exploit Minors, by Independent News Media. A former Peoria High School's varsity boys basketball coach and Phoenix Suns superfan has pleaded guilty to 3 counts of attempting to commit sexual exploitation of a minor. Patrick Batillo, a Goodyear resident, was arrested in April 2024 on charges he solicited videos and photographs from juveniles engaged in various sex acts. Peoria police stated in a press release, he was fired soon after his arrest. Batillo entered his pleas in Maricopa County Superior Court on Monday. The plea deals covered 3 incidents that took place on October 1, 2023, July 1, 2023, and February 15, 2024, according to court documents. The Arizona State Board of Education suspended his teaching certificate in November 2024. Peoria police stated Batillo allegedly messaged a 15-year-old boy via Snapchat about selling images and videos of the student depicting various sex acts and in states of nudity, according to court records. After speaking with the parties involved, it was learned that Patrick Batillo had been asking juvenile victims to send videos and photographs of themselves in various sex acts and in various states of nudity, a press release at the time stated. Batillo would tell the victims that he would send them money for these photos and videos. Batillo was known for energizing crowds as Mr. Orange during Phoenix Suns games. He started as interim varsity boys basketball coach at Peoria High midway through the 2019-20 season. And this concludes the article entitled, Mr. Orange Pleads Guilty to 3 Charges of Attempted to Sexually Exploit Minors. Our next article is entitled, Surprise Vet Fest Aiming to Connect Community, by Independent News Media. The City of Surprise is sparking the community to connect at its next Vet Fest. The all-ages event is slated for 5 to 8 p.m. on Saturday, April 11th at Surprise Stadium, 15850 North Bullard Avenue. Veterans, military families, and their supporters can hear live music, visit food trucks and vendor booths, get information from veteran service providers, check out a kid zone, use the sensory tents if needed, and view static displays of military vehicles. The event's unique focus is on honoring and supporting those who have served, are currently serving, or are looking to serve in the military. Attendees can connect with one another and learn about the many different supports and resources available to veterans in the community. Vet Fest is part of Surprise's ongoing mission to be a veteran-friendly city, offering support services and building community connections. The city is encouraging the community to join a special service project to support the troops. Volunteers can assist with writing letters to service members, sorting donations, assembling care packages, and decorating donation boxes. Youth for Troops will be collecting additional donations to restock the items needed to send monthly care packages to military members. Drop-off bins for these donations will be provided at the event. See a list of needed items and register as a volunteer at surprise.az.gov/vetfest. And again, this will take place on Saturday, April 11th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Surprise Stadium, and this is free admission. This concludes the article entitled Surprise Vet Fest Aiming to Connect Community. Our next article is Hometown Christmas Parade Raises $40,000 by Joshua Fenty, Glendale Star staff writer. Last December, the Hometown Christmas Parade brought joy and holiday spirit to the masses of Glendale while collecting donations to give back to the city's vulnerable populations. The community's generosity resulted in 12,260 pounds of canned food and $40,000 in donations. I learned a long and long time ago that people are typically most compassionate between Thanksgiving and Christmas time, Glendale Mayor Jerry Weyer said. To capitalize on people's generosity, that's the time that you really need to focus your attention. Although the need for food doesn't stop after Christmas, it continues year-round for many families, young people, and kids. The food and monetary donations went to supporting Glendale-based Hope for Hunger Food Bank. The local nonprofit is open from 8 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. According to PhoenixRescueMission.org, 1 in 6 children in Arizona face hunger. 14% of residents across Maricopa County are uncertain where their next meal is coming from, and 55 neighborhoods within the county are food deserts, lower-income communities lacking access to affordable, fresh produce. Wires expressed that despite the efforts of Phoenix Rescue Mission, Hope for Hunger's parent organization, over the years, the community's needs don't decrease. Though that reality can be terrifying, he said he has every intention of continuing to combat food insecurity anyway. It seems like the need doesn't get less, but you can't just give up. You can't throw your hands up and say, I quit, the mayor said. Weyers explained that by ensuring that students don't go hungry, the nourishment will help them to succeed in school, which will lead to opportunities in the workforce and higher education that may help them to break the cycle of poverty. Though the Hometown Christmas Parade is organized by and hosted in the city of Glendale, guests from different cities across the state visit for the event and also contribute to the charitable efforts it supports. Though the event takes place toward the end of the year, the mayor said the committee has begun making preparations and that roughly 9 months feels more like a few days away. While the Hometown Christmas Parade is one day out of the year, there are other ways in which the Glendale community supports its vulnerable populations and combats food insecurity. For Weyers, one of the best ways to support someone who is experiencing poverty is to direct them to places where they can find dedicated help and resources rather than giving them a few dollars for the moment. Give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime, the mayor said. Give that money to the food bank instead of the person standing on the street, and encourage a person standing outside the street to go to Phoenix Rescue Mission, Goodwill, St. Vincent de Paul, or any of those organizations that do provide help and give people resources they need to get their lives turned around. We want our city to be a shining example of what we can do to help people. Following the success of the last Hometown Christmas Parade and looking ahead to the next one, Mayor Weyers set a new fundraising goal. I would ask everybody, business owners, clubs, organizations, private citizens, churches, help me double that, he said. We all need to work to help people in need and help them get their lives turned around so they can become part of the solution in future years. And this concludes the article, Hometown Christmas Parade Raises $40,000. Our next article is Peoria Unified Moves to Close Kachina and Pioneer, written by Joshua Fenty, Peoria Times staff writer. The Peoria Unified School District Governing Board recently voted to approve the closures of Kachina and Pioneer Elementary Schools following an unsuccessful bond override and declining enrollment. The decision was paired with a reconfiguration of Cactus High School to a 7-12 grade model to further support the district's long-term sustainability. We need to meet the moment, and we need to make changes to better serve our students, Governing Board member Melissa Ewing said. We realize the weight of school closures, but looking out at all the principals in the room, I know that when every student walks into your building, you make them feel welcome, and you and your team make sure that student has everything they need to learn. Whatever happens at the end of tonight, I know that every student that walks into our doors is going to be welcomed and provided a great educational opportunity. Overall, the Peoria Unified School District has 36,659 students currently enrolled versus a 47,473 student capacity, reflecting that 22.8%. 10,814 capacity of the district is not being utilized. As previously reported in the Peoria Times, Cactus High School has 1,040 students with an enrollment capacity of 1,932. Canyon Elementary School has 284 students with an enrollment capacity of 493. And Foothills Elementary School has 489 students with an enrollment capacity of 874. The closures of the two elementary schools and reconfiguration of Cactus High School seek to bridge those gaps. Effective for the 2026-27 school year, Kachina and Pioneer Elementary Schools will be closed. For each school's students, the district will implement attendance boundary adjustments into Canyon Elementary and Foothills Elementary, respectively. As previously reported in the Peoria Times, Kachina has 263 students versus a capacity of 708, and Pioneer has 419 students enrolled with a capacity of 639. Both schools were closed in unanimous votes from the governing board. Also effective beginning school year 2026-27, Cactus High will reconfigure to embrace a 7th to 12th grade model, primarily accepting students from Oakwood Elementary as a designated voluntary choice feeder school. As previously reported in the Peoria Times, the new model for the high school intends to expand opportunities for current and future students. The plan affords the middle school student population its own area of the campus and offers accelerated math and English courses and a selection of electives, one creative art, one career and technical education, CTE, one physical education, and a fourth elective from any category. Junior high school students that choose to take an accelerated English course must also take accelerated social studies, science, and CTE. Eighth grade students that choose to accelerate in math specifically will have the option to complete one semester of Algebra 1 and one semester of Geometry, or one full year of Algebra. We want to make sure we create a space for 7th and 8th graders, and we looked at the 300 building courtyard area, Cactus High School Principal Christy Hammer said. We have created separate spaces for our 7th and 8th graders should this pass, such as restrooms, locker rooms, lunch periods, school dances, electives, even breakfast. They'll have separate lanyards and IDs to make sure we can identify our junior high students from our high school students. In response to further concerns regarding the potentially negative influence presented by older students on younger students, Hammer noted that 93% of Cactus seniors were 17 or 18 years old at the start of the school year, with 63% still being 17 as of the time the meeting occurred. Zero alcohol-related instances were reported on campus, the principal said, and 0.03% of students have been caught with a vape or electronic cigarette device. Reflecting on a survey the school completed of its students, Hammer said Cactus seniors consider dating a freshman unacceptable and said that there are no cool points for that. Therefore, dating a 7th or 8th grade student would be unthinkable. According to Superintendent Kenneth Christopher Casey Summers, the decisions to close the two elementary schools and reconfigure the high schools followed various data-driven discussions, plan analysis, and engagement opportunities with communities to determine the best path forward. In August, the governing board voted to partner with Grace Design Studios for master planning services, followed by a comprehensive budget update and presentation on enrollment trends on December 10th. Early January saw district communications with its families and staff regarding the plans for the future, which resulted in the creation of a website for submitting community feedback. On January 8th, the governing board further reviewed enrollment trends, facility utilization, program needs, financial sustainability, a comprehensive facilities assessment, community engagement, and long-term planning analysis, concluding that school and program consolidation would be necessary to support long-term sustainability. Our master capital plan provided a district-wide diagnostic identifying where structural pressures exist, and across several indicators, the data consistently converged on Area 2, Summers said. Including schools such as Cactus High, Canyon Elementary, and Foothills Elementary, Area 2 covers a region south of Bell Road and north of Grand Avenue. The report demonstrated that Area 2 was a particularly prominent intersection of facility underutilization, aging facilities, deferred maintenance, and operational inefficiencies. The feedback window officially opened on January 12th, followed by the superintendent's student advisory on January 13th, and a board meeting towards the end of the month on January 22nd. On January 25th, the district mailed a public hearing notice to Peoria Unified Families and continued to engage in communication with families and staff through January 28th, making frequent updates to its website throughout. Both Foothills Elementary School and Cactus High School hosted family information nights on February 3rd and 4th, respectively. An additional hearing and community forum was hosted at Cactus High School on February 19th, followed by a report to the governing board on the results of the forum on March 5th. The feedback window closed on March 11th, and the board met to vote on March 12th. The future of the Peoria eCampus K-8 synchronous learning program is to be determined, as the governing board tabled the item to be discussed at a later date. During the public comment section, a resident spoke to parent concerns regarding Cactus's incoming 7-12 model, assuring them of Principal Hammer's abilities and the school's value and performances. "I know parents are concerned that their 7th and 8th graders will get lost in the shuffle, or those that are neurodivergent wouldn't get the attention that they need. I'm here to tell you that isn't the case," the resident said. "Christy Hammer does not mess around when she's picking teachers. That's why out of 7 high schools, Cactus is one of 3 that hasn't been in the news for coaches or inappropriate behavior by teachers, because it would not be tolerated. The children will be safe." And this concludes the article, Peoria Unified Moves to Close Kachina and Pioneer. And we'll wind it down with our last article, Rethinking the Wine Glass by Judy Bloom, West Valley View columnist. Are the days of wine and roses over? Perhaps. Wine consumption for Americans is in decline. Wineries are closing in Napa Valley at an alarming rate. Evidently, boomers are to blame. All those lovely wine glasses once clinking over dinners, at bars, at home, at backyard gatherings, are now being replaced by beer, water, or only God knows what. Is this because we are getting healthy? According to wine experts, the answer is not necessarily. Americans who love wine are the older folks, and they are dying off. No other generation seems to be as enamored over having a glass of wine as people of a certain age, and that age would be over 65. Generation Z and millennials do not care about tipping glasses together. Hold the Chardonnay. Forget the Pinot Grigio. Instead, how about a canned cocktail or spirit-based seltzer? Or simply a non-alcoholic beverage? Yep, evidence reveals that younger generations are moving away from the bar stools to barbells. What could be healthier and more fun than meeting your date at the gym, then going for a 5-mile run, and later having a matcha latte? The future of booze is suddenly uncertain. People are ghosting the glass of wine and working on being mindful of what they put into their bodies. In fact, younger folks often claim the taste of wine is gross. There is a term for drinking less alcohol. It is called a sober, curious lifestyle, replacing alcohol's social role with coffee culture and functional drinks. The functional aspect implies drinks infused with vitamins, proteins, and botanicals. Have you tried ashwagandha lately? It is so relaxing and a stress reliever. Perhaps boba or bubble tea? Get energy. Oh, and a mocktail is a non-alcoholic beverage that mimics a cocktail. Tasty with no hangover. The entire global wine industry is experiencing a severe downturn. Consumption is down by over 12% in the past 5 years. More importantly, it is not just about wine sales that are in a free fall. Alcohol usage in the United States has been in decline since the 1970s. Today, 54% of Americans say they consume alcohol, which is the lowest number in nearly 90 years and a whopping 13% drop since 2022. In other words, attitudes have changed. Many people who believe that moderate drinking was harmless now view alcohol carrying health risks. More teenagers and young adults are saying no thanks to drinking. Maybe like the old days of cigarette smoking, drinking has become so yesterday and old-fashioned. Yet, wine drinkers rarely focus on the alcohol content. They care more about the experience, how wine has long been woven into the fabric of celebrations, gatherings, and shared moments. There was something romantic about ordering a bottle of wine at dinner at a swanky restaurant, or celebrating a special occasion with a bit of bubbly. And who knew that drinking wine is a boomer thing? Let's not whine about wine being an old person's libation. I must try a mocktail and give you a report. Cheers to better health. And that concludes the article, Rethinking the Wine Glass. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Remember, you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Thank you for joining me for the West Valley News Digest. I'm Karen Kelly, your Sun Sounds volunteer. Please stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds of Arizona.